Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively what it says on the wall behind us. We're Costas in. We are in Dundalk. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation. I will be wearing this for the Mickey Coachella segment, as well as Goodwill, who we talked about jobs in the last segment. This is with the jobs programs, everything they're doing at Goodwill. We've talked a lot about that. We had John Hoey from The Y, one of your good friends, Don Moeller, on a couple weeks ago as well. Man. And the Restaurant Association of Maryland, because we are Costas. I've been at 31 crab cakes in 31 days. Invited the sitting governor, but the next governor is with us. Wes Moore is with us now. And I've been all over the state. We've been trying to have fun. And first thing, this is a thirsty state, Wes. I'm telling you right now, a lot of breweries, a lot of bourbon distilleries, a lot of vineyards. But the crab cake, people say, why'd you do the crab cake tour? Because I didn't even have that last time at State Fair when you were just Wes Moore of Robin Hood. The crab cake tour was designed to bring people together in this setting. And I figured every restaurant, every bar in the state would be proud of their crab cake. Yeah. There would be black people, white people, right people, left people, Eastern Shore, Western Shore, city, county, Ravens, Orioles, even some Commanders and some of that. But through the state, bringing people together. And Don said in the beginning, like what I've learned, and I never even answered the question because you're going to be the governor. Everybody's here to listen to you talk. How beautiful the state is this time of year. And that's why when you pulled up, I was out in my car and I saw you pull up in your big machine there and you had your head down. You didn't see me. And I said, he's not even seeing these rolling hills. You're probably on 50. You're not going up to Hurlock past the Confederate flag and the Trump flag to get the crab cake. You're not going down to Hooper's Island to get that delicious, delectable thing that they have down. So I mean, I'm going off road, but you're trying to win an election, man. You know? So, I mean, I think it's a different thing we've been doing here. I've been drinking beer and crab cakes.
Let me tell you something. The reason that I'm going off road is because we're trying to not just win an election, we're trying to win an election, we're trying to win an era. And some of the best experiences that we have had on the campaign trail have been going out to places that not just normal Democratic candidates haven't gone to, but also places that were not on the agenda. But we just had time.
That's where you have the most fun.
That's where you have the most fun. And also just saying, like, you know what, hey, I'm hungry. Instead of saying, where's the fastest chain, I'm like, let's pull up. Where's the local spot?
You need to find Crumpy's Donuts in Hagerstown.
There you go.
Where they open at 7 p.m. And you look at Google and you're like, they can't open at 7 p.m. It's a donut shop. It's got to be 6:45 p.m. It's in an alley. And you go line up. There was a rainbow.
And we've been there.
Yeah.
So, and we've been there.
Right. So, you know, you learn these things about these communities. But it's such a beautiful state.
It is, man.
And I think it's great that you're going to be governing. And I hope you do a good job.
Well, I'm going to stop you there.
Go ahead.
I'm going to stop you.
Go ahead.
You see, again, you may have been a student, but you didn't learn all of
the
lessons.
Can I just hold your thought? This week is the 40th anniversary of my relationship with Don.
Oh,
40 years
ago
this week.
Love it.
My parents drove me down Del Valle Avenue, and I walked in, and this young, good-looking, well-spoken,
who was that guy?
Nice man, Mr.
Who
Moeller,
was that guy?
My parents said to him, you've got to get my boy into this journalism class. He's going to be a journalist. He's not going to... So... Don, so
lots of gray,
in this class.
A large number of these gray hairs are at 40.
So go ahead.
You keep saying he's going to be the next governor. I'm guessing that Mr. Moore and his team would like to remind everybody there's an election.
That's right.
There's not a coronation.
See, this
in
is the point. If I was in
that's
private
right.
company, I'd say nobody's going to vote for
there's
that.
There's not
that
a coronation.
But I know how important this is. I mean, believe me, we need a turnout, and you need to be for you to be an effective governor.
I think you
need people to want you to be the governor.
And I tell you, we cannot underestimate the fact that we are running against the Republican nominee. He won.
Right.
He won the election. And so you cannot underestimate the fact that also we have seen a 30% increase in Republican voter turnout over the past 4 years. So there's a base that is energized. And he has been not just the catalyst, but the recipient of the energy. And so we are, you know, I believe deeply that we got to keep first principles. Right. The reason that I believe that we were successful in a primary, in a very competitive primary with, you know, 10 candidates, very credentialed, you know, good people, is we had to outwork everybody. We earned everything. Nothing was given to us. right?
You know, a lot of people thought you could win.
Well, when we were first talking, we were at 1% when we first got into this race. I mean, like, you know, literally, I'm not sure and I'm not voting was polling higher than us when we first got into this thing, right? So we had to outwork everybody. We earned it all, right? You know, there's an old expression in the military, earn it. And we earned it, right? But that's exactly how we have to win a general. We've got to go out there and earn it. And we are taking nothing for granted, not just because you have to take an opponent seriously, but we have to be clear about who is running on the other side.
Well, Wes, I think about it this way. And I just read a book by Ezra Klein talking about the tribalism in America.
Yeah.
And you start with that we have devolved.
That's right.
Since the 60s into this tribal nature where really the candidates don't matter. And when you think about it, look at Georgia. There's an example where Herschel Walker is running against Ralph Warnock.
Yeah.
Now, people would look at that. They would listen to both candidates and they would say, well, that's silly. I mean, Warnock will get 80% of the vote. Well, the good reverend, in every poll that I've seen, while ahead, is still almost within the margin of error because tribalism. So we start there, right, as a starting point. So if Democrats want to kick back and think we've got this, they could wake up and it could be a real shocker.
Absolutely. And you see how, you know, when people say, well, look at the Democratic registrants. It's Democratic, you know, look how many more Democrats you have registered than Republicans registered. Also, if you look at the campaign that we're running, I'm not asking people to vote for me because I'm a Democrat. Don't vote for me for that reason. Learn about our vision. Learn about our values. Learn about the places that I want to take the state. Learn about the kind of state that I know that we can be, how that this is going to be Maryland's decade. But then vote for me for that. And frankly, my pitch is not just to Democrats. If it's only Democrats that are voting for us, that's not a win that you want to have. I want Democrats. I want independents. I want Republicans. I want us all to say we believe that the vision that the Moore Miller ticket is bringing to the future of Maryland is more aligned with who I am and more aligned with what I hope for my family and my future than what the alternative is providing. That's why we're going all around the state and asking everybody. And when I go to groups and we're out there talking to groups, I don't start my conversation with, you know, if you're not a Democrat, can you please leave the room because I'm not talking to you, right? I want them all because that's exactly how I plan on governing.
As you went around the state, and Nestor and I probably, I think it's safe to say, Nestor, there's no topic, if we did one of those word clouds, that we've spent more time on in 3.5, almost 4 years, than public safety. Oof. And crime.
Oh, no doubt about it.
I mean, it would sure dominate the word cloud. As the three of us walked in this morning, we haven't had enough time to really dig into the article. In the Baltimore Banner, shout out to Justin Fenton for the article. Yeah. But there's an article with the headline that there's $8 million dedicated to help protect and support witnesses in criminal cases in Baltimore City that is sitting unspent because the state and the city are in a dust-up over how to get the funds to the city. Now, I'm going to turn to you as someone who might be the governor. When you read that, what's your reaction?
Outrage. It's outrage. Because it's not that the money isn't there. It's that it's bureaucracy and a lack of partnership means that the resources are not getting to where they're intended to get to. And you know, when you look at the fact that right now, so for example, in the city of Baltimore, there's a 41% closure rate on homicides. Right? 41%. That means if I commit a homicide in Baltimore, I've got a better chance at getting away with it.
It's always driven Nestor insane.
Vic Naraja has spent, you know, three different campaigns sitting here, you know, quoting those kinds of numbers. And every time it happens, I think to myself, when my wife drives alone into the city, we were in the city last night, that if, you know, I saw that crazy incident on the freeway in Houston a couple days ago with the guy getting, I'm thinking, if that's my wife in the car, like, what are the chances that we catch the criminal?
Correct.
You know, I mean, that should be alarming to every citizen.
Everybody.
That should be unacceptable.
That's right. And so when you consider that, the fact that you have such a high closure rate, such a low closure rate, and people ask, like, well, so what are the factors that play into that? You know, part of it does play into this idea that we just have homicide detectives who are just overworked. I mean, they're literally working 6, 7, 8, 10 cases at once. And the chances of them actually closing a case when you're working so many cases is difficult. You could actually take state resources, put them on loan to the city of Baltimore, where you could then say, we're going to decrease the workload of the homicide detectives, increase the closure rate, and make people feel safer, right? One thing that you could do immediately, without anyone else, without a legislative vote, that is literally a decision that the governor can make.
One of the things that jumped off at me in that quick look at Fenton's article before we sat down, and I read it twice, I thought, well, of course there's some issues, even if you got the money. Baltimore City Police Department has one officer in the division dedicated to protecting and supporting potential witnesses.
That's it.
One officer.
Well, what can you do in Annapolis that Larry Hogan couldn't do or was unwilling to do? Look, man, I've given Larry every benefit of the doubt, you know, like in regard to him sitting here in this. But the notion that he was anti-Baltimore as a Baltimore resident and a guy who sold my property for less than I wanted to sell it for when I decided it was time to sell. Yep. Like, you know, I've lived that. Yeah. But wanting someone in Annapolis who's pro-Baltimore, what does that mean to you? I mean, just start with the red line. I mean, Larry sat here a year ago today, August 30th last year, down in Annapolis, and Don got all tough with him and county executive. What about the red line? He said, I ran on killing it, so I killed it. And he and I thought, well,
that was pretty much a direct answer.
Elections matter.
And again, I think I said to you before we're jumping from public safety and we'll jump right now. But I do want to talk about transportation because I think what frustrated you, what I said later was part of that answer resonated with me because he was correct. Up front, he said, I will kill the red line. I thought it was an awful decision. My predecessor, Kevin Kamenetz, thought it was an awful decision. I was just with, but I gave the governor a check mark. He did what he said he was going to do. I thought it was a terrible decision.
Now, even though it wasn't pro-Baltimore.
Correct. Yeah. It was, yes, correct. All those reasons. Now, I was with some folks recently, Wes, and they were, again, they were talking about the labor shortage and the issues, and they continue to bring it back to issues of child care, and then it's either 1 and 1A or 1A and 1-1, and transportation.
Yes.
If it takes me hours to get to a job, and it's how do I do it? So my question is, other than a campaign slogan, how does Wes Moore, Aruna Miller become the Transportation Administration? And the second part of that question is, does it have to be the red line, or can it be an alternative to the red line? There's a couple of questions in there.
Yeah, yeah. And even before I get to the couple of questions, let me tie up the public safety piece.
Yes,
because I think that does come back.
Well, I mean, it comes down to an Annapolis-Baltimore issue. What, you know, how can you help Baltimore from Annapolis?
Yeah, yeah.
Literally.
Well, and so on the public safety in here, and where dovetails into transportation, on the public safety thing, in addition to things like, again, state resources to put them on loan to the city of Baltimore, being able to get the bureaucracy out of public safety and the politicization out of public safety, where partnership is going to be necessary and required. And that does go back to the idea of helping to show the state and illustrate to the state why the future of the Baltimore region even matters. Name me one state in this country that is clicking on all cylinders, but the state's largest city is unhealthy. The answer is, there is none. It doesn't exist. It's important for folks, whether you are in Hartford or whether you are in Cecil or whether you are in Somerset or whether you are in Calvert, that the state's largest city is healthy. Because if not, the amount of economic growth you are losing and missing out on is astronomical, not to mention the moral impact. So we've got to make sure that
heart not functioning.
That's
period.
It.
You know what I mean?
No limb is working if you have a blockage in your heart valve. Right, nothing is working.
I love that notion of Baltimore as a heart. Don't.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt.
Sort of the aorta, right?
Dundalk
would be the aorta.
There you go. Right, Dundalk is the aorta.
Right.
But it is true, and I think that there's been some vision for people out on the farm or out in the county or removed to say, let it burn. Yeah. Man, nothing pissed me off more as a Baltimore resident or as a Baltimore positive person than people who think somehow crushing Baltimore makes them feel good out on the farm. It's not good for them.
You are, and I'm not going down there. How often do we have? I'm not going down there. It's like, what?
The entire state will lose
right.
if Baltimore continues to be unhealthy. The entire state will lose.
Okay, so what do I see before we go to transportation, what do I see then in the first year from a Moore administration to help Baltimore be safer?
Well, one is transportation.
Okay.
So I mean, and seriously, because you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I ran one of the largest poverty fighting organizations in the country. We invested tens of millions of dollars in job training and job reskilling and literally some of the best programs in the country. We funded and invested. And here's what I continue to be reminded of. You could put all that money in the job training you wanted. If a person can't get to the job, then what's the point? Right? It just feels like a very sick lie that you're making to that person. And so things like transportation assets are going to be important. It is the reason that we are going to emphasize the red line. And it's not just a red line, not just the East-West Transit, but it's the red line plus. Like, how do we have a fully integrated transportation system that's moving people around from where they live to where they work? It's one of the reasons that I'm very, very excited about, you know, our running mate, Delegate Aruna Miller, who is not just an extraordinary and a very seasoned and respected legislator out of Montgomery County, but what she also is she is a transportation engineer by training.
That might be helpful.
By training.
that might be helpful.
Going to be our state's next lieutenant governor, right, is a transportation engineer by training. And so she is someone who, and our vision, our collective vision, the Moore Miller vision, the Leave No One Behind agenda, means we are going to invest in transportation assets that move people from where they live to where they work. And I tell you that the decision that the governor made, and you were absolutely right, he ran on killing the red line and he did it.
He did it.
But the thing that was most problematic to me about what happened, it wasn't just the decision. It was how it was made. And in addition to the fact that we literally returned close to $1 billion to the federal government, because that's what the decision of the red line was, basically say, here,
we don't want it.
We don't need it. We're good. Take it back.
We threw it away.
Take it back, right? But it was also, the justification was, well, there were lines that people didn't agree with and people didn't want to stopping here, stopping there. What leadership is you bring everyone back around the table and you say, I understand that there might be some challenges about placements of lines and that type of thing. And we're going to sort it out right now. We're going to figure it out. Now, we are not going to leave the folks in the Baltimore region stranded either. The conclusion of all of our discussions is that we are going to create transportation assets that is going to help with economic mobility for the people in our jurisdictions who need it most. Now, let's sort it out. That's leadership. Leadership is not just simply saying, flip the table, give the money back to the federal government, and let's leave our citizens stranded. That's not the answer, and it should have never been the answer.
Well, it was a political decision.
Correct.
Right? I mean, you know, this wasn't a people decision.
No.
It was a get myself voted
decision,
right?
And so much of transportation has been politicized. Like, we have got to get the politics out of transportation decisions. And whether you're talking about the red line, whether you're talking about what's happening with 270 and the American Legion Bridge, whether you're talking about SMART and down in Southern Maryland, get the politics out of this stuff. We're talking about people. And people need to be able to move from where they live to where they work. We need to do it in an environmentally friendly way. We need to make sure we're prioritizing, you know, how are we thinking about having local voice and local electeds inside of the process. We can do this, but we've got to prioritize actually working together to get it done.
Wes, I want to, and I know we're, you know, we're going to wrap up here shortly. I sort of want to, we're now at the vision of the administration and what you might accomplish. We started today really with the back to school stuff. I wonder in terms of your personal story, because I think so many parents out there, they get frustrated. It's hard, right? It's hard raising kids. And I'm thinking of little Wes Moore, whose grandmother and mother said, this boy needs a little military school to get his act together. Walk us through, who was Wes Moore as a 10 and 12 and 13-year-old, and how did that Wes Moore evolve into who he is today?
Confused, hurt. You know, I felt handcuffs on my wrist when I was 11. And you know, we came up in areas that were over-policed, and we knew it. That was the way that so many things were just dealt with.
And you couldn't leave. Right. You didn't. You had no means to leave.
No. I mean, my mom didn't get her first job that gave her benefits until I was 14. Right. The first job that gave her reliable hours. That was actually the job that moved us back to Maryland.
So what happened if you broke your arm when you were 12? Insurance, you know, I mean, go to the hospital, right? You had nothing, right? You know what that feels like. You know what that's like waking up every day, right?
And part of the reason why I, you know, and when people say, well, you know, and part of the reason I love Baltimore Positive and I love the ethos of this show, when I tell people, you know, I'm a Baltimorean and proud, and I tell people, you know, I wasn't born here, but Baltimore was the first place that I found home, the first place that I felt actually fully embraced me. You know, when people say, where are you from? I say, you know, I don't have the luxury for that to be a simple question. Right. Because I moved around a lot when I was younger. And it was, frankly, it was tragedy and traumas that forced me to move around. And part of the reason that I love Baltimore and Baltimore Positive is because Baltimore was the first place that I actually found and felt positive, where I felt like it was a community that actually embraced me. And so when I think about what it means to go back to school, or the idea that, you know, I'm going to watch the idea that we could actually have an administration that looks at all of our children and says, we see hope in you. We see promise in you. We see that you, that your success is a core part of what it means for our state to be great. We've got to take that seriously. And we've got to make sure that our policies actually reflect that. Because if our children see that, if our children feel that, they're going to thrive. I am here today because I had people in my life who saw something in me that I wasn't prepared to see myself yet. But they believed in me. And they believed that part of their job and responsibility was to create that pathway. And I just believe that all we have to do is offer the same thing forward. And to say that our policies and our budgets, they should reflect our values, and they should reflect the high expectations that we should be having for our children and for our families.
I would say this. We had Wes on almost 3 years ago out in Catonsville at State Fair. You can find it out at Baltimore Positive. Just put Wes Moore and they'll all pop up. It's Christmas time. There were trees behind us. My hair was shorter. Don was younger.
State Fair had been open 1 month.
That's right.
One month. Okay. Think about that.
So the plague happens. That night we sat with you. And my wife knew about you, read the book and like all that. And so my wife came out. I remember it was like a Friday night. We did sort of a special happy hour thing. Because we had done mainly coffee, morning coffee. Yeah. But you were like back and forth New York. And I'd said to you, I bet you live here. Of course you live here. Did you know that night when you got up, I'm going to run for governor. I'm thinking of running for, I mean, like, I because it didn't feel that way to me. Because
like, it didn't feel that way to me.
No, he really likes you and like all that. And I don't know if you know, but Mueller's really into this politics thing. And he would have said
to me. And he's pretty good at it, too.
Mueller would have said to me, well, I mean, I can give you all the, I'm going to tell a Mueller story right now.
Oh, God.
So we're down at Fadley's, and Brandon Scott, young Brandon Scott, comes out, tells his Mervo stories and all that stuff. And it was literally, he was placed onto our show to sort of practice running for mayor. Hmm. And we had a great hour with Brand. We really liked him. He gets up, he leaves, says goodbye. And Don's like, nice kid, too bad he can't win. And, you know what I mean? Like, literally, right? Like, there is a perception early on.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. No, because you feel like the machine, because everybody thought Sheila was going to win. Yeah. You know, for you at that point, where does that happen? Because Don would have said to me that night, he's thinking about running for governor. He's like, and none of that came to me. No. And that when you decided to do this and I saw leaving Robin, I'm like, I wonder if he's been at this since he was 30.
Well, Wes will tell you as he answers that question, full disclosure, at 18 months ago, 2 years ago, we had breakfast at Miss Shirley's.
That's right.
And one of the things I said to you is, I don't know what other people are telling you, but just so you know where you're starting from, no one knows who you are. Is that what I told you?
Did he tell you not to run, too?
No.
Did he tell you not to run, too?
No, he told me not to run, but he was honest about, this is your chances. These are the odds.
Right.
And he was honest about that. You know, he's saying,
what's your path to victory?
That's it.
Is that it?
Something
that
like
right?
that.
Did I do that right?
But you can't.
That's what he did to me when I told him I was going to run for mayor.
No, I was more direct. You cannot win. But go back to your question about
Could have been like the 20 executives that I talked to. They looked at me and they're like, you're not black. That's what they said
in
to
the
me.
City. When
I was, like, but there are these, I don't call them even tropes or what mysteries or myths that an African-American couldn't win governorship in this. There's all of that, right?
We've never had, you know, a governor who has not had a measure of political experience coming from another office.
You've heard all of that.
All
so when was this Miss Shirley's thing that was OTR?
Oh, 18 months ago? Yeah.
Yep.
So, and you were on the fence then, or you were, I don't care what you think, Don, I'm running. Where, I mean, when do you have this conversation with your wife and stuff? Because I do want to know that. I haven't caught up with you on any of that.
Well, no, I mean, there definitely wasn't some, like, you know, like aha moment when, you know, this is a process because it's a lot. And I do, it's important for people to understand that, you know, that the respect I have for all these people who choose to put themselves and their families and their friends through this. This is, I mean, Don, you know, I mean, this is a gauntlet.
That's why I never ran.
But you know,
I mean, I'm real.
And that's
about
really why he told you what's your path to victory. To say, you're not going to do all this and go back and manage Robbie. I mean, you're doing this to either win. You're only doing this to
win. to come in and, you know, don't do this if this is like
you don't have a chance to win.
If you don't have a chance to win, right. If you're going to come in, you know, sixth, seventh place.
What
and
made
get
you
whatever.
Believe you had a chance to win?
So,
great question.
I'd give those. Go
I like yeah. that one.
So, let me tell you why I decided to do it and then where I thought I had the chance to win. The future of the state is incredibly important to me, and I do think we are at a generational opportunity to get this right. And I remember having a conversation with one of my colleagues over at Robinhood, and is when we were trying to make adjustments on, we were trying to urge, you know, a governor to focus on things like adjustments to the child tax credit. Because as Don knows, I mean, like, I am obsessed with why we can be a society that allows child poverty. I think it's barbaric that we allow child poverty. And particularly when we have initiatives that can be in place that can address the issue of child poverty, we have to move. And we've got to move now on it, right? And so we're working on this initiative to try to address the issue of child poverty, making adjustments to the child tax credit that, you know, that if you look at what happened on the federal side, where it literally almost cut child poverty in half in the stroke of a pen.
Well, that was your work at Robin Hood,
that's
right?
That's exactly
this is where
right.
You lived and breathed.
That's exactly right, right? So I was saying you can make adjustments, do similar things on the state side that actually could take the half that were knocked out, that were still in poverty, and cut that in half again. I'm like, this could be generational. Literally working with the governor and saying this is one thing that we need to be able to make happen, was saying you got a state of the state coming up, literally helped to put the line in, literally helped to write the line, what could put in the state of the state to make this happen. Looking at an advanced copy of the state of the state, nothing in there. And I am very, very upset. And so I call up one of my colleagues and I'm like, and I'm, you know, upset. And he says to me, he's like, you know, we've been working on this for 6 months. To be able to get them to make a sentence in a state of a state. What if you could just write the whole speech? And that's the point, right? The people who sit in these seats, it matters. Because they helped to control
off,
the agenda.
Literally.
Yes, of course I did. And frankly, I should have. Because this
you
is
put a lot
bill.
Of work into this and government's letting me down.
And I know the kids. I know who would have benefited from it. From a simple stroke of a pen. And we decided to leave them. We decided to leave them behind, right? And so, you know, so when people,
all right, you got my vote.
Well, no, but in terms of, you know, the well, how did we think we could win? I had no data to show anybody. I didn't have a poll that showed people saying like this is what it could look like. At least any poll that was worth anything, right? But I think that the thing I believed deeply was if we outwork everybody. If we show up in places where people don't expect us to show up, if we go into places where people don't normally campaign, if we are willing to say, I'm willing to put our vision and our values against anybody, but we've got to outwork everybody to make sure that they hear it and they understand it, then we're going to pull this thing off. And so was it a bit of a hope beyond belief? Yes, of course. But I think that this moment is worth it. And that's why we decided to do it.
Well, let's wrap up then with the family question, because I thought that was interesting. That moment where you sit down with Dawn and say, Dawn, I got an idea.
By the way, she really likes Dawn.
How does
she
that
sees
guess?
Me, so how's Dawn? Well, ask him out. You know, how he's doing. He's in Alaska.
He's a nice
she
young
does
lady.
Love Dawn, boy.
She loves Dawn.
She
but
loves
what,
Dawn.
How did that conversation go?
Or
can you not share?
Yeah, no, I approach it carefully. Well, you know, so the beautiful thing about Dawn, and this was in some ways kind of the gift and the curse, is that she'd worked in politics before. She was Anthony Brown's former chief of staff. She worked for Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. So she had known this work. So she knows the impact and the kind of good you can do, which she was like, and she's like, I know my husband, and I know where his heart is, and I know the kind of work he wants to do. Yet she also knows the world of politics. And she knew that what we were now about to walk into, and the, you know, and all the craziness of it, and the lies and the innuendos and all this kind of stuff, and the way you're exposing yourself to a population that you never had to do before. But the thing that I always got from her, and as Don Mullen knows, I love my wife Dawn deeply, and she was like, if we're gonna do it, we're gonna do it as a family. I'm all in. Everybody's all in. I know not just what's coming, but I know how to prepare the family for it. And as she said, and as she said on the stump before, she said, and if you do this, it's going to be your time, and you're going to be the one that nobody saw coming. And we have run this race with this idea of saying, this is the moment that Maryland gets it right.
And I'm guessing for the next 70 or so days, Team Moore will continue to run through the tape and take nothing for granted.
Through the tape.
What's the most important thing next 70 days for you in an election that everybody already has you winning, right? Like, as I drove over here today, I see no path to victory for the other guy at this point, but you're running hard. But what are you focused the most on over 70 days? With your time as much as anything else.
Yeah. What I'm focusing on is that we are going to spend every waking minute living up to our first principles, which is outwork everybody. And I need everybody in our state, everybody, political, regardless of Democrat, independent, Republican, I need for them to hear from my voice, I need your help. And I'm not just talking about your vote. I need your help in order for us to be the state that we can actually be. And so we are going to be spending the next 70 days going, throughout all 24, being able to make our pitch. Because if we do that, we're not just going to win an election. I think we're going to send a message, and we're going to have a mandate to then go and actually get the work done on behalf of the people of this state in January.
Wes, appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you,
brother. He's running for governor. You can vote for him. I hope you vote for someone. Please get out and vote. Don Mohler here. Of course, all of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. I'm getting the Ravens tickets beginning next week. We got Ravens scratch-offs.
Let's
Ravens
do it.
Season.
It's
all brought
year.
To you by Window Nation, our friends at Goodwill. And do not forget, Restaurant Week coming up. Save some money. All the chefs are showing off September 16th through the 25th. My thanks to Wes Moore and his crew. We have Pam Wood ahead from the Baltimore Banner. We also have Mickey Coachella stopping by a little later on, celebrating 31 crab cakes in 31 days. Number 30 is right here at Costas today. I'm also going over to Heavy Seas to see Hugh Sisson. You're going to join us a little later on as well. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. From Costas, back for more on BaltimorePositive.com.